Talking today with Don Close from Rabo AgriFinance. Don, last time we talked, I guess back at the cattle industry convention in San Antonio, it was a whole different world. My gosh, things have changed so rapidly. And this is, I guess some folks would call this a black swan event. This is really truly something like we've never seen before.
That's true. And as I've tried to think back and think through all of the different, the BSC event, I think through 9/11, I think through all the dairy buyout program. I think there's components of this one that is the most market disruptive thing since we've seen since the Nixon price freeze.
When you think about where we are right now, I know that some of the numbers are really, really kind of mind blowing as far as the percentage drop on our cattle prices, the drop in beef production over the last couple of weeks, especially. It just seems like we're almost getting waves after waves of all these things happening to the entire sector.
And the way that I've been thinking about this, clearly, if you take the increase in carcass weights over a year ago and the implications that has had on trimmings, the market had some issues of its own that we've had to address. But then you take the pressure on the pork deal, the slowdown in slaughter. So basically I'm trying to think, we had a phase one with just erosion in the market. But once we got to when we're starting to see these plants go single shift, radically reduced hours, or closing altogether, the risk contained in that is almost a phase two of this whole thing.
When you think about how things have kind of unfolded, of course the immediate reaction when the thing really started to get real to the markets, the Wall Street fell. We saw all the futures kind of sell off as well. But yet we know that that wholesale box beef trade especially spiked as folks were panicking and cleaning out the meat cases. Kind of walk through that with me and exactly how that really fit together.
When we started seeing businesses close, when we went to the stay at home orders, that shockwave, and I agree, clearly there was panic buying. I think from there we kicked into a round of hoarding. And after that, after a couple of weeks of that, the market did take a temporary pause. But I think if there's any surprise in that, Ron, it's that this demand, beef demand at retail has continued, and all proteins really, but it has continued at a much higher level than what would normally be anticipated if you preconceive any of these sort of things. The point that I'm trying to make is from total hotel, restaurant, and institutional sales, our work is showing that QSRs or the quick service restaurants are still doing about 80% of their normal business. On casual dining and fine dining, that business is off by about 2/3. But if you combine the two, what is total restaurant business? We're still thinking it's in a range of 40 to 42% of normal. If you take the amount of variable costs that restaurants have cut out and the staff let go and all of buying less product, I want to think with that volume of business that restaurants are probably in a better position to survive this than what a lot of the conversations have been. But it's also, so if you take that 60% of lost share, you force that over into retail. You add to that a component that people want to feed their families well. They want to have wholesome food. They want to have comfort food. That has been very complementary to the meat case. And so I think with this whole thing, beef demand has remained very good, particularly when you take the, you know, and whether it will stay that good if you take the level of unemployment and all of the things going on right now. But to this point in time, I think overall meat and specifically beef demand's held together very well.
Don, one of the numbers I think I saw here was the kind of the low water mark so far on our live cattle futures. We haven't seen those kind of numbers since what, the early 2000s, 2005, 2006, in that time period. Is the futures market getting less relevant, or is it just predicting how bad things could be?
Well, you've landed on the $6 million question. Less relevant? I'm really hesitant to say that. And clearly with what we've seen over the last 2 months, the need for risk management is probably as great as it's ever been. So that leaves us of, okay, there's a perception out there that there's that much risk in the market. I think just the uncertainty of this one and the risk that the market saw of what happens if we close those beef plants, that uncertainty has forced futures prices lower than, in my opinion, what they've needed to go. As a result of that, there have been twofold. First off, we've had unprecedented record level basis levels. Was an absolute windfall for the guy who was hedged, but it put such a deep discount in those deferred contracts that it makes it virtually impossible for somebody to buy any replacement cattle at a price level that they can hedge at the time they're buying them. I think the basis issue has been totally out of hand. I think we need to take a look at the futures market and see if it's working as well as it needs to be. But I don't think it's lost its relevancy.
The wholesale box beef trade, really, I mean, you know, a lot of folks are pointing to that and say, well, we need to maybe pricing our fed cattle right now off of that wholesale box beef trade. Is that actually happening, you think, to a greater degree than maybe normal?
It hasn't, but I think we're transitioning over to that. I think a lot of it is if you take the calculated packer margins, and I don't think they're, because if you take the loss of efficiency, capacity utilization that they've had with the staffing issues, reduced kill, their costs go up. But when we've had calculated margins in a range of $400 to $600 a head, when you have the amount of open discussion going on, you've had numerous senators talk about inquiries, you've got different state associations that are requesting the Department of Justice investigation. When the level of attention to the marketplace and is that packer taking undue advantage is as great as it is today, I think the packers really have to start looking at ways to support that cash market or at least narrow up that spread. And in this case, it does give the drive to put more reference on values from cutout values and less emphasis on the futures market as much as would normally be the case.
I guess what an example of that is that cash bonus a couple of weeks ago?
I think so. Now, there was some frustrations with that because the way that was handled, it really wasn't added to cash price. So it didn't increase the weekly ad prices paid to producers. It was simply added to the bottom of the sales sheet, but it was an absolute positive gesture. I don't want to take away that side of it, but there was some frustration on the way it was handled on an accounting basis. I think that ties back to our earlier conversation that absolutely right. When you have this much disparity in the marketplace and the likelihood of investigation, you know, if they can do anything they can do to put themselves in a more positive light today, you're having to testify is obviously in their favor.
Don, you know, for cattle producer, you know, you got any suggestions? Got any tips on, you know, how you weather the storm?
It's a tough one. Now, the one thing, you know, we do have the working group going on that has representing NCBA looking, has developed an idea on what total losses to the industry have been, and have made recommendations to that how to disperse that money. That the results of the work from that working group will in turn go to NCBA, and NCBA will work with, share that with USDA on how to make that disbursement. But the, of the $9.5 billion that's in that CARES Act, a portion of that, will be coming to cattle producers. I don't in any way want to imply that that's going to make producers whole, because it's not. But I think it will be a step in the right direction. As far as specific recommendations I would make to producers, I think as hard as it, you know, at this hour, don't panic, that we will get to an end of this deal. We will see market conditions normalize. You know, for the level of disruption we've had, is the market going to immediately spring back to where we were? No, I don't think that's a realistic expectation. But I do think we will start to see more and more signs as the number of coronavirus cases starts to subside. We get any kind of stability in the workforce in these beef plants. I do think we'll slowly come back to normal. If we get a point where we get restaurants back open, that will be a massive help. But the big, you know, not to panic, stabilize as much as possible, and let's see what we have down for the long haul.
Kind of a final companion question to that is, overall for the entire sector, how are we going to dig ourselves out of this hole?
I think they're going to have, you know, the first thing is whether deferred futures come up or cattle prices come down, stocker and feeder prices come down. So that's, and calf prices. But the first thing that's going to happen is we've got to normalize these price relationships, both of classes of cattle. We're going to have to normalize relationships of the live to cutout ratio. And even again, we've talked about it already, but the distortion that we're seeing in these basis levels to the futures market, it just seems like so many of the inherent relationships that we count on for daily measurement in the marketplace are suddenly working against each other. So just normalization of those price relationships is going to be a real indicator in getting us headed in the right direction.
Thank you, Don. Don Close with Rabo AgriFinance. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.